FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and still in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, getting ready to leave now. It's been a great trip. Started out with Freedom Fest and wound up at the Sprott Resource Conference, which I've been going to for several years now. It's just an amazing conference to go to. Unlike many mining conferences, it's a manageable size. 500 to 700 people attend. There's about 70 companies, and they really are hand-selected by Sprott to give you the best overview and the best opportunities to pick out the best companies that have the brightest future. Look, right now, gold, silver, and all commodities have gotten the stuffing kicked out of them. Let's face it. We know what's going on. Right now, gold's down another $10 the ounce to around $1,217. Silver down in the low $15 range, $15.24 right now. And hey, the dollar up 0.37 to 95.43. Not going to make excuses, conspiracy theories, whatever. It's just the way things are now. Doesn't matter how they got there. What matters is where they're going to. And we're going to see movement in this sector. It's getting oversold now, which potentially, when it comes back, could be substantial returns. Hey, as always, I invite you to join the discussion. Come send me an email, make my day. It's the best part of my day in the morning, getting that cup of coffee and reading your emails. I'm a little bit behind now because I've been on the road, but when I get back in the next couple of days, and by the way, it is July 19th and it's 2018, so when I'm back on the weekend, I'll catch up on your emails. So keep them coming. Hey, anyway, it's time now for another Triple Lutz report. And this would be episode number 458. So I started out my trip in Las Vegas and at Freedom Fest. It was held at the Paris Hotel. And really, Vegas has just gone down the tubes recently. Yes, there's still great shows. There's still great food there. I enjoy the restaurants immensely. However, the place is getting seedy. It's getting run down. I remember when I used to come there 10, 15, 20 years ago, the streets would be power washed. The sidewalks would be power washed every single morning at around 6 or maybe late at night. I didn't know when they did it, but the place sparkled, and there's always some homeless, but now this place is overrun with homeless people, and you'll hear my next presentation about what's going on in San Francisco. My solution to handle it, it'll be done if we can get political will to manage the homeless situation. We could have it solved within 90 days at the most. Anyway, so Vegas, the city itself, it's rapidly becoming a failed city. You know, the casinos never quite recovered from the crash. And what happened was they just started, people gambled a lot less gaming going on. I happened to have had a nice little score at the blackjack table. Two scores, 15 minutes each, and I took away a couple of bucks. So on many levels, this was a profitable trip for me. But Vegas, they've had to make up the lost revenue at the tables. So now they nickel and dime you for everything. They overcharge you for everything in these casinos. It used to be a good value proposition, a trip to Vegas. And now it's turned into just an opportunity to rip you off and to maximize the bottom line by giving you as little as possible and charging you as much as possible for the privilege. And it was very crowded when I was there on the weekend. always dead during the week, especially in the summer. Summer is the downtime because it's 100 plus degrees in the desert. Not a lot of fun to walk around oftentimes. We actually had some rain for the first time I've ever been in Vegas. It rained 3 days out of four that I was there. But the future of Vegas, unless they get their act together, is bleak. And the Mandalay Bay shooting didn't help anything. The fact that they've stonewalled it and that they've refused to release information to help the public understand what happened, it's just become another government cover-up, another FBI, Clark County whitewash. There were others involved with it. I'm definitely quite sure that there are others involved besides a lone gunman. We hear that way, way, way too often. And more facts come out. And we know that it was just not this one guy. He was a very suspicious character anyway. But I don't want to get into that, just to let you know that the city hasn't recovered from that, even though it might have recovered in terms of attendees, in terms of visitors. Psychologically, this is a city that's down on its heels. It needs true leadership to recover. I mean, you know, there a few years ago, I remember they said there were like a couple thousand people living underground in the tunnels, the storm flood tunnels. There's a whole network of it, and they keep expanding it. And I don't know how they fared during the rainstorm, but it's just not a good place. Very sad. Maybe it's because of the name Sin City that a place that's built upon sin, and I don't mean biblical sin, I mean sin where people can exercise their darkest instincts. Gambling, drugs are legal, you know, pot is legal there now. Alcohol flows abundantly and free. So it's not built on healthy instincts of humans. It's built upon catering to some of the basest drives, instincts of man. And maybe this was all preordained. It was destined to become a failure. Hey, if you're looking to buy gold and silver at these really depressed prices, the only place to go to is Miles Franklin. MilesFranklin.com. Talk to Andy Schechtman or any of his able assistants there. It is the only bullion dealer in the nation that is licensed and bonded, heavy insurance. So you're further assured that if you buy something from them, it will be shipped. They're headquartered in Minnesota. Minnesota became the only state that actually licensed and controlled and regulated bullion dealers in the country. For Andy's business, it's probably a negative, but for you, the consumer, it is a definite positive. So if you're looking for bullion, and I'm thinking I'm going to buy some silver at this point because getting close to 15 bucks the ounce. I mean, I'm still way ahead on my silver holdings, and most of it was purchased at well under $10 the ounce in 2008 and 2009. But look, this is where it's at. This is the only place I would tell you to buy it from. There are so many other dealers, many of them reputable, but when it comes to trust, when it comes to confidence, because look, nobody's shipping you gold COD. You are going to have to pay for it in advance, gold or silver, and that requires sending them a check or a wire or whatever, getting them the money. But the good thing is when they get it, they ship it that day. Once it clears their bank and they're confident that it's a valid transaction, it gets shipped. I've known Andy Schechtman since I got into this business, and the company's been around for decades now. So MilesFranklin.com, they're a sponsor of FSN, a proud sponsor, and we are thrilled to be with them. Just really great people. I have dinner with Andy when I see him, his lovely wife. They're like family to me. They really are. So highly recommended. So the next thing, on to San Francisco. They've adopted what I call the open sewer theory of policing. And have you heard about the latest theory of policing? It's derived from the broken windows theory of policing. That was used effectively in New York, and it holds that if the police allow all broken windows and graffiti to take over a neighborhood, all manner of serious crime will start occurring shortly thereafter, because abject neglect is a signal to the criminal element that they can indulge in criminal acts with little fear of retribution. And when you turn that around and you start cleaning up a neighborhood, fixing the broken windows, getting rid of the graffiti, the opposite happens. And you go after quality of life crimes. That's drug dealing, street drug dealing. That's people using the sidewalks, the streets as toilets. You will drive down crime in that area as a result. But under the open sewer theory of policing, it's a whole nother matter. And look, in San Francisco, it's just taken one step further with the open sewer theory of policing, which is being implemented at this very moment. And the open sewer theory of policing holds that if you allow vagrants to defecate on public streets and sidewalks and allow them to shoot up drugs wherever they please, pretty soon your city will turn into an open cesspit, which is exactly what's happening in San Francisco. It's an epidemic of public defecation and discarded needles and crack vials. Just recently, some street urchin dumped 20 pounds of feces on a street corner. It remained there for a number of hours. And contrary to this being a rare occurrence, it happens tens of thousands of times per year, and it's been increasing at a rapid rate. It's hundreds of times per day they find feces on the sidewalk. Well, The mayor of San Francisco, she was just elected, first female African-American mayor. She's a brainchild of Comrade de Blasio, New York City's mayor. And she has found just the solution, not enforcement, but educate the homeless to clean up after themselves. It's absolutely brilliant. Maybe we can train the homeless to bathe regularly and to take their soiled clothing to the dry cleaner. Right? Perhaps it'll be so effective that we can finally convince the homeless that they'll be much better off living in a home or a shelter rather than on the streets. And Ms. Breed, she just can't see the value of enforcement in addressing public behavior problems, which is no surprise because people of her ilk believe that there is a guaranteed constitutional right to homelessness. And who are we to argue when none other than SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, has affirmed that right? The overwhelming majority, and that's on numerous legal cases and precedents. The overwhelming majority of homeless persons fall into three categories. Number one, chronic alcoholics who are so debilitated by their disease, and yes, it is a disease, that they have ceased to function. And then number two is drug addicts who are similarly afflicted to the alcoholics and cannot function in society. And then there is number three, insane lunatics. I understand that's not politically correct, but that's what they called them for many, many years, and they are unable to function or properly care for themselves as well because they mentally don't have the capacity to do it. And then there's a fourth category. It's a much smaller category of the temporarily homeless who have fallen upon hard times and are trying desperately to remedy the situation. You've seen them as a result of the foreclosure epidemic, tent cities sprung up. But most of the people that we're talking about fall into the first three categories. It's the liberals, the progressives would like you to believe that everybody falls into the fourth category. But the fact is, the first three are the ones, the alcoholics, the drug addicts, and the lunatics. And the fact is, the statistics about homelessness on that group of temporary homeless, like temporarily homeless families, the statistics are very misleading because in many cities, a family waits many years for public housing and they can jump the line if they become quote unquote homeless. And homelessness becomes a means to an end. And the government will put them up in nice hotels. In New York City, they spend close to $1 million a day, putting people up in hotels, not all welfare hotels, some high-end hotels, which I'm sure the hotel owners really don't want, but they want to fill the extra rooms, the empty rooms. And you might not be aware of it, but for nearly 100 years, the U.S. had a very effective means of dealing with homeless, chronic substance abusers, alcoholics, and insane persons. It may not have been always been compassionate. It was often very inhumane, but it did stop people from living on the streets. I'm talking about civil commitment into sanitariums, which kept these people from living and dysfunctioning on the public highways and byways. Most of them, there were always some what we called Bowery bums or bums in New York. Now you're not allowed to call them that. And what happened, though, these people were often abused in these institutions. You know, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, perfect example. And there were numerous scandals and awful things, human rights violations. But still, overall, it was much better to have these people institutionalized than have them living on the street corners. You know, Geraldo Rivera built his career on exposing maltreatment at the Willowbrook State Hospital in Staten Island. And this led to eventual court cases that drastically scaled back the rights of states to involuntarily confine such people. Supposedly, when the courts opened up the mental institutions, there was going to be support networks that would magically appear and help these people stay sober and sane. But the reality is there are certain people who cannot stay sane and sober unless they are institutionalized. And when it happened, you know, when the release took place from the institutions, these networks never, ever appeared. And it was a wholesale dumping of mentally ill people and substance abusers on the street. Back in the 60s, early 70s, there were 560,000 people housed more or less permanently in these mental institutions. Now there are less than 200,000. And this takes no account of the increase in the population of the country, which has probably doubled. The progressives always want you to believe that the drunks, the druggies, and the crazy people, that's the minor part of the problem. The real problem is those temporarily homeless, but that is a lie. So the standard of commitment was raised to the point where it's nearly impossible to meet it. To be committed against one's will now in most states, there must be a showing that a person is an imminent threat to themselves or others. And judges often go out of their way not to see such threats, to be ignorant to them. Homelessness needs to be seen as an imminent threat to the individual embarking upon it. Living on the streets is among the most dangerous activities that any person can undertake. The poor, hapless souls are subjected to the worst predatory elements of society. Women get raped and beaten. Early death is the rule, not the exception, when you're living on the street. Where's the humanity in turning these people out into the hell of street living? That's what I'd like to know. And left to the streets, the mentally ill will see their conditions greatly worsen. They often progress into violent threats to the communities they inhabit, and yet the judges still refuse to commit them involuntarily. They harass residents for money, they become violent when refused, and no doubt attract more serious criminals into a neighborhood. I remember one time some guy was asking me for money and he dropped his VA card into my car and I stopped to give it back to him and he kicked my door and put a big dent in it. It's just disgusting. I was ready to belt the guy and then I said, you know, there's nothing I could do to him. I'm not making excuses for him, but he can't help it. And it's unfortunate, but that is the case. The sad part is that many times this behavior can be controlled. Large numbers of the homeless have been successfully treated through ever improving psychotropic medication protocols. However, our compassionate, and I put that in quotes, courts have ruled over and over again that the mentally ill cannot be forcibly medicated, even if the alternative is violent schizophrenic episodes that threaten them and the public. Where is the rights in that? How does that help people? Isn't it great to know that the liberal elite are watching out for the most helpless among us and protecting their right to insanity? Because that's what it comes down to. The key to solving this problem is to loosen the commitment standards and assign every such person an advocate or guardian. The massive homeless budgets that pay for the welfare hotels and et cetera need to be reallocated towards rebuilding mental hospitals and repopulating them. They can be privatized. Government can stay out of running these hospitals, except where the criminally insane are concerned. And we can greatly improve the conditions over what existed in the 60s and 70s, and now for that matter. This is the most humane approach that will enable your city to reclaim its streets and control this intractable, unsolvable problem or issue. And perhaps more importantly, it will enable government to fulfill their primary obligation of protecting the rights of the people. Look, would immigrants of the last century have made the long journey to America if they believed that the streets were paved with excrement? Let's force our ineffective, effete leaders to stop this madness now. And they can do it, but we have to force them to do it. There is no other way. Anyways, that's it for that part. But QAnon, evidently QAnon's go on vacation too. It's been 2 weeks since there was a post. I don't know what's going to be here with QAnon, but it certainly looks like it's heating up. We had Trump's summit with Vladimir Putin. The fact that all these people are screaming Brennan, Clapper, all the people of the deep state who stand the most to lose should say that we're getting closer. They're panicking. And really, you just have to wonder, is it going to happen and when? Honestly, I never believed that Hillary or Obama will receive justice for their heinous crimes, and their crimes of plenty. You could be sure of that. We just heard from Putin, hedge fund guy, Broder, put $400 million into Hillary's campaign. Haven't heard a denial of it. We just heard Broder come out and say he's a victim, of course. So what's the point here? You know, there's a great article in the Wall Street Journal. America's factory towns, once solidly blue, are now a GOP haven, and they're getting bigger. They're starting to prosper under Trump's policies. We're seeing that all over the place for sure. And the fact is that those states, someone called them the Brexit states, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, Ohio, Minnesota, all these places were solidly blue, and now they're shifting to red, and probably Pennsylvania too. Probably once the next election comes about, you're going to see that they're red and they're going to stay red. That's an amazing thing. And hey, Wells Fargo, one of the primary banksterist institutions, is refunding hundreds of thousands of customers for add-on products like legal services and insurance and all sorts of stuff that they never wanted and that they just got as for the privilege of having an account with Wells, with the mighty Wells Fargo. It's turned into the biggest bank in the country, by the way, if you didn't know that. More accounts there, more loans, etc. What has Warren Buffett been doing while all this is taking place? That's what I'd like to know. They make enough money. They don't need to steal also. But, you know, our contention is the very nature of these institutions makes them centers of theft, of lawlessness. And hey, we're going to see more of this, no doubt. The banks will at some point have to be disassembled. I don't know when it's coming, but it will happen. The big banks will be broken down and split up and made into more manageable entities. Hey, the Proposition 3 in California, which would have allowed people to vote for splitting the state into three separate states, has been knocked off the ballot by the Supreme Court of California. I'm not sure what their rationale was, other than they don't like it. Probably it will break up their power. And not that it's ever going to happen, because if you split up California, you would give Democrats an unfair advantage in the Senate. So you would have to split up Texas as well. And I don't think that's a bad idea either. Texas is too darn big. California is too darn big. Texas may function a little bit better than California, but in some ways, not a whole heck of a lot. Certainly, as far as states go, it functions better than most. Infrastructure-wise, great roads. You know, public safety, it's a violent state for sure, but there's a lot to Texas that works. And hey, it's just interesting to watch what's happening. Anyway, we'll leave off at that. Don't forget, check out milesfranklin.com. Send us an email. Love getting your emails. KL@KerryLutz.com. Twitter feed @KerryLutz. And Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. Don't forget, subscribe on your smartphone, on your iPhone or your Android. On Android, you go to Google Play, look up Financial Survival Network. Boom, we're there. On your iPhone, you just go to the podcast app, search for Financial Survival Network, keep hitting that subscribe button. Eventually, they'll get delivered automatically to your smartphone. We've got some apps. If you have a chance to download the app, it's still kind of in beta testing. Love to get your feedback on it. Let us know. And that's it for today. This has been another Triple Lutz Report. Kerry Lutz signing off.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.